The views and opinions expressed in this show do not represent those of Hutton Broadcasting or its employees.
Good morning. This is Daniel Cobb, Doctor of Oriental Medicine, and welcome to my radio show, Natural Medicine. I've been a Doctor of Oriental Medicine for about 11 years. I published a variety of articles in various national journals, including Well-Being Journal and Journal of Orthomolecular Medicine, and the Foundation for Alternative and Integrative Medicine. I've also, well, this summer, one of my major other activities is going to be doing presentations on how to reverse heart disease entirely with nutrition. I'm usually here in the studio with my wife Karen, but she couldn't make it today. The other thing I want to bring up is I love call-in questions, and especially today, because after all, this is a talk show, and it gets tiring just to talk to myself. call-in phone number, in case you want to give me a call and ask a question, is 505-424-4550. I'll give you my clinic phone number also, 505-424-9527. Now, the topic for today is going to be the immune system, or optimizing your immune system. But I'm going to start off by throwing out a little bit of discussion about some recent articles. And the first one is MERS, or Middle East Respiratory System. This has been in the news. It's a new coronavirus in the same family as colds and flu. And it started in Saudi Arabia and has, you know, shown up in a variety of Middle Eastern states and also in Europe, and now finally the United States, but only showing up in people that have recently traveled to the Middle East. And they portray this disease as very, very frightening. It has a 30% death rate. It is completely resistant to antibiotics. And so they portray, you know, the treatment of this as relatively, you know, standing by the bed and feeling helpless. but now I want to point out something. If you have a 30% death rate, you have a 70% recovery rate. And that's not just an upbeat, you know, twist of the numbers, but we'll get back to that later. Now here's and this is not anything terribly new. I mean, this has been going on for at least a decade in varying degrees. For instance, here's a 2012 article. The menace posed by germs resistant to powerful antibiotics was all too apparent when a deadly drug-resistant form of pneumonia bacteria struck the Clinical Center for National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland last year. It infected 17 patients and killed 6 of them. The episode is especially chilling because the center is one of the nation's most sophisticated research hospitals. It imposed incredibly stringent isolation and sterilization procedures that yet even these failed to keep the germ from spreading. Rapid genetic sequencing by the National Institutes of Health researchers established that all 17 subsequent infections originated from the first patient. The hospital found the bacteria could remain undetected for weeks and be transmitted in complex ways. For instance, the germs lurked in sink drains in cleaned rooms. Eventually, plumbing had to be removed to get rid of the bacteria. The disheartening episode shows again the importance of slowing the development of resistant strains and of developing new, more effective antibiotics. Now that last statement, links into an idea that I sort of look at as pathological thinking. How do you treat a bacterial infection? Well, the conventional approach is to say you give them antibiotics. And what if that doesn't go so well? Well, the conventional approach is you give them stronger antibiotics or higher dosages or for a longer time. Or sometimes you give them multiple antibiotics in combination. But of course, as we go through this show, I'm going to propose an alternate idea. I would say it's an obvious idea to anybody who's lived long enough to be alive before antibiotics existed. Here's another another article and this is a 2013 article about totally drug-resistant tuberculosis. That it does exist. They found it in South Africa and I think also in India. And they say doctors are warning the world is on the brink of an outbreak of deadly and virtually untreatable strain of drug-resistant tuberculosis unless immediate action is taken. And they claim 90%, they refer to a previous experience of 90% death rate from a previous outbreak. So one of the things I want to point out is, and I'm not saying that a 30, 50, 60, 90% death rate from an infectious disease isn't scary. Yes, it's scary. But let's look at the numbers and look at what presumptions are being made. Now, let's say you look at this 30% death rate from the Middle East respiratory syndrome. And that means of the people that come down with this disease, 70% survive it. Okay. Now, let's push that a little further. How many people out of the, let's say, 10 that got exposed, you know, to go with, to make up this 30% and 70%, how many more people got exposed to this infectious disease that didn't even come down with the symptoms? Now here we have to estimate, but I would say at least two and probably more. Let's say three, just to show you the math. So let's say it has a 30% death rate, but let's say only one out of three, 30% death rate among the people that got the symptoms of the disease. Now, what if only one in three people that were really exposed actually came down with the symptoms? Now, what this does is this brings the death rate among those exposed down to about 10%. And so you can look at, now let's look at the 90% death rate that was quoted in the article as a possible result from the totally drug-resistant tuberculosis outbreak. Let's say that one out of two people, or let's say one out of three, let's say one out of three people that got exposed to this totally drug-resistant tuberculosis actually came down with the symptoms of the disease. So we take this 90% death rate for the people that came down with the symptoms, and you got to divide it by three. So it's 30% of the people that got exposed actually died from the infectious disease. Now, that makes it a little less scary. 30% death rate is still pretty scary, okay? But when we come back from the break, I'm going to explain to you how it's, you know, we're going to reduce that number even further. And we're going to reduce it not with a sleight of hand, but with a convincing argument about how disease is treated in the United States and the Western world. And at this point, we're going to go to a break, and I do want to remind everybody that, yes, especially today, I want call-in phone questions. And if you want to call in, 505-424-4550 is the number. This is Daniel Cobb, Doctor of Oriental Medicine, and welcome back to my radio show, Natural Medicine. And my pleas have been answered. Roger, who has been on this show before, called in from out east. And before we get Roger on, I just want to give him a 20-second introduction. This is the guy that had a lot of health challenges himself and started addressing them, maybe I think it was about 7 or 8 years ago, and he's never stopped heading forward. He got rid of his amalgam fillings, changed his diet, got rid of several health problems, and now he's become a relentless promoter of the idea of let's just call it natural medicine. Eat right, detoxify your body, and you can get rid of an amazing number of diseases that conventional medicine calls incurable. So now I'd like you to welcome Roger, who's out there curing the incurable.
Well, let's not go that far.
Well, tell me what I said that's not true, Roger.
Well, what I'd like to know is, like, say, for this, quote, disease out of the Middle East.
Yeah.
If any, like, the idea of the antibiotics, it's almost like a form of insanity.
Yeah.
You do the same thing over and over again, and it doesn't work, so you do it again.
Only with more antibiotics and more kinds and for a longer time and higher dosage.
Right, yeah, and I mean, well, what other effect does those antibiotics have on you? Well, that's all right. You know, we're just trying to, put a Band-Aid on the problem. Has anyone that you know of for this disease tried, like, massive doses of vitamin C or garlic?
I haven't read about it. Okay, but another similar disease, SARS, which, that's about 5 or 6 years ago, and there was a couple thousand cases worldwide, and one of the things that got almost no publicity ever was, I think it was in Vietnam, Cambodia, some Southeastern Asian countries, some of the doctors, and this was also a disease that was highly drug resistant, it may actually have been a virus, so it would have been, antibiotic resistant because it's a virus. But they also claimed this was a somewhat untreatable disease. But I read about doctors that were routinely, doing vitamin C IVs over a series of days, and they were curing it. And it was an uneventful problem at that point.
Yeah, I mean, see, this is the thing. I wonder if a lot of, quote, the diseases that they're finding is, like, how shall I say it, Linus Pauling sitting there saying every disease or one of those, guys that are a lot smarter than I ever will be, sit there and say every disease can be pretty much traced down to a vitamin or a mineral deficiency.
Yeah, and I think if Linus Pauling was still hanging around at this point, he'd be on the phone saying, "Yeah, hey, why don't you try vitamin C or vitamin? There's a lot of antioxidant, there's a lot of antiviral vitamins and minerals, and this gets into the next portion of my show, which is I want to slap people in the face and remind them. Do you remember that you really do have an immune system?
Mm-hmm.
and if you made that immune system work optimally, one of my big arguments today is that, remember, I'm saying there's a certain percentage that get the disease when they're exposed, and of that, there's a certain percentage that survive it, even among the most terrible of these infectious diseases. And what's the difference between the people that die from it and the people that don't? Your immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And so why not take a look at that?
Now a lot of the cancer drugs that are just coming out now,
yeah,
they make a big plug that, well, this works with your immune system. Well, you know, any disease is, you know, we have those cells in our body already. I mean, they're there.
Yeah.
So the immune system keeps them in check.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of, well, we got to strengthen the immune system. I mean, I don't know what's taken the cancer, quote, industry so long, except maybe for profits, and I probably shouldn't say that.
Well, no, really, Roger, you should.
Okay. but the idea is, you know, more medicine should be concerned with getting the immune system up to par so it can fight this stuff rather than, you know,
tear down.
All these antibiotics and chemo and
killing chemicals
right.
that kill.
Yeah, it's much like anyone that has a back operation. Unless it's done really right and you're really lucky, you're going back for another back operation, probably in a year or two.
Yeah, and I've heard exactly the same thing about that kind of operation. But also, the idea applies. Yeah, the idea applies to the idea of how drugs are used to treat infectious disease, is that they're mostly chemicals that kill things. And one of the things that, and all the MDs in the entire country, in the entire Western world, have gone to medical school, and they all know that we have a large amount of bacteria in our body. In fact, for every human cell, there's probably 10 microorganisms, right? So we're outnumbered here, okay? In some senses, by the count of cells, we're the visitor. But when you take an antibiotic, and it depends on which, you know, what kind it is. If it's a broad spectrum, if it's very specific, it does less of what I'm about to describe. But the first thing that happens is a lot of the bacteria that are, you know, throughout your body, on the surfaces, on the skin, but mostly in the intestinal tract, a lot of those die off.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you'll find hundreds of articles telling you that, you know, 40%, 50, 60, 70% of your immune system starts with the bacteria in your intestinal tract. So it's when you take those antibiotics, you start killing off part of your normal immune system. So it's like placing all your eggs in one basket. You say, I'm going to take this antibiotic, and it better work, because if it doesn't work, my immune system is now going to be disabled for a period of time. And which is something that all these articles about these untreatable diseases, they never mention it. Never once.
Yeah, well, we killed the patient, but we got the disease. Okay, that sounds, I mean, that reminds me, you know, of my father. Toward the end of his life, the doctor gave him 3 CAT scans. And you know, I said on the third one, well, I mean, and I says, what are you giving them the third one for? And he says, well, it's not telling us what I think it should tell us.
Were they full body CAT scans?
Yes.
And a full, just for background information for everybody listening in, a full body CAT scan gives you the radiation of many, many, you know, I've heard quotes of 50 to 100 normal x-rays.
Mm-hmm.
And so the radiation damage from a single full body CAT scan is significant. But then if normally, you know, doctors are cautioned to say, oh, you really shouldn't be doing this CAT scan because this full body CAT scan, because you had one a year and a half ago and the radiation is cumulative and it's too much. So giving three over a short period of time, especially to somebody who's sick, is really...
Well, they made sure he didn't survive. I shouldn't say that. You know, that's probably being cruel.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But that may have been... Certainly, three full-body CAT scans over a fairly short period of time contributes, you know, is going to cause problems. It's going to add to the body burden of all kinds of problems.
Well, it's much like my brother. He had meningitis mm-hmm. when he was young. Now, whether he got that after the polio vaccine that he had.
And we've discussed this in that he was born around 1954.
1955.
1955. So he was right in the time frame when the polio vaccine was being rolled out. And there was an enormous number of, there's a very distinct rise in the cases of things like polio that include meningitis.
And you just kind of sit there. The doctor, because he was mentally retarded, the doctor says, well, there's this new medicine out. I'd like to put him on it. And all I asked was, how does it react with the medicine he's already taken? And he says, well, anything you put in your mouth, your body has a reaction to it. Then he goes right ahead and says, okay, let's give him a full dose here, and then we'll just slightly cut him back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, of course, when I made my famous comment to him, and I said, why don't you take it? Because you can tell us what it's doing to you. He can't. And that's when I became persona non grata with that doctor, which didn't, you know, looking back on it, didn't really bother me that much.
Yeah. Well, Roger, we're about to go to a break.
Okay.
And thanks for calling in.
Certainly. Thank you for having me.
And call in again sometime. And maybe I'll have you back on as the major subject to the show in the future.
Oh, good heavens. Thank you.
Okay. All right, well, now we're going to go to a break.
Okay.
This is Daniel Cobb, Doctor of Rhinal Medicine, and welcome back to my radio show, Natural Medicine. The subject today is optimizing the immune system and specifically sort of with in reference to many of the infectious diseases that are described as highly drug resistant or sometimes even totally drug resistant. We were doing some math earlier in the show on a type of totally drug-resistant tuberculosis that was linked in an article with a 90% death rate. And by adding into the equation the idea that maybe only one out of three people that gets exposed to it would ever actually come down with the disease, we've moved the death rate down to 30%. But now let's take that 30% and work with it a little bit more. Remember, a lot of the immune system is in the intestinal tract, and it's dependent upon the bacteria that's in the intestinal tract. And if you take antibiotics, one of the effects is to kill off some of the bacteria. And therefore, when you take antibiotics, of course, let's presume the antibiotics are well chosen and appropriate for a particular bacterial disease, such as tuberculosis, and that the antibiotics, you know, do kill at least some of the bacteria, but they also kill some of the bacteria that's part of your immune system. So the question is, if the bacteria that you're going after with the antibiotics is antibiotic resistant, then maybe you're killing off more good bacteria than you're killing off bad bacteria. And this is what I would argue was definitely happening, especially in the cases where you'd say, let's say you can use the word totally antibiotic resistant, which means that if you take it on the face value of you know, what the meaning of the word is that antibiotic will not kill any of the bad bacteria, but it will still kill some of the good bacteria. So you're dropping your immune system down to some degree without getting any compensation by killing off some of the bad bacteria. And so this, I think, is a factor. When medical sources quote, you know, going back to this quoting of a 90% death rate, that's a 90% death rate with conventional treatment. If you take a person with a normal immune system that's where the immune system is compromised enough so that they can actually get the tuberculosis, and then you give them high doses for a long period of time of multiple antibiotics, a cocktail of antibiotics, which will predictably have an adverse effect on your normal immune system by killing off a lot of the intestinal bacteria, but not have much an effect on the actual tuberculosis bacteria. So that 90% death rate is that initial 90% death rate that we've since diluted down to about 30%. That initial 90% is reflective of a person that gets this totally drug-resistant bacteria, tuberculosis, that is then treated with an antibiotic which reduces his natural immune system. So this raises the question, let's take that same 90% figure and say, of the people that get this totally drug-resistant tuberculosis, what would the death rate be if they didn't use antibiotics? Well, I would contend it would be significantly lower. And, of course, it's just a guess because I don't get my way. I'm not calling up these tuberculosis clinics and telling them, quit using those antibiotic drugs on the patients that have the totally antibiotic-resistant tuberculosis. So let's imagine that it's not really dramatic, but let's say... let's go back to historical numbers. In the late 19th century, before, and I used to live in Prescott, Arizona, and in the late 19th century, before there was any antibiotic usage at all, people that got tuberculosis would frequently come to Prescott, Arizona. It was one of the favored places for what they called sanatoriums for tuberculosis patients. And they would get a warm, dry environment with a lot of sunshine. And they would rest, relax, and, you know, do modest, very modest exercise. And about 50% of them would overcome their tuberculosis. Okay, so here's a historical number that says that if you get tuberculosis and you do... You take no drugs, you don't even necessarily change your diet, but you change your environment. You might get about a 50% rate of curing the disease. So let's say that 90% goes down to 50%, just because no drugs were used. But put that person in an optimal climatic environment. And then, so you get down to about 50%, and now you say only one out of the three people that actually got exposed to this tuberculosis really came down with the disease. So now you take that 50%, and now you're down to 17%, okay? And, but some people might say, oh, but this is drug-resistant tuberculosis. It's much more virulent than the old tuberculosis. And to that, I say, not necessarily so. Drug-resistant is resistant to drugs, for sure. But maybe the additional, you know, virulence that's ascribed to these cases of tuberculosis comes from the fact that the immune system is weakened by the use of antibiotics. Now, we're getting another call-in question, and this is Amy. Amy, are you on the line?
I am. Good morning, Dr. Cobb.
So why don't you give me your question?
Well, I was wondering what types of food you would recommend to optimize the immune system, particularly meats.
Okay. Particularly what?
Meats or protein.
Oh, okay. Well, meats, you know, meats get a bad rap in our culture because, and to a certain extent, they deserve that. But mostly because if you just go down to a generic grocery store and consume a lot of meat, you're consuming, in conventional meats, you're getting a lot of antibiotics, growth hormones, and if they're grain-fed with conventional grains, you're getting pesticide residues and all of that. I mean, especially the growth hormones. I mean, and well, the antibiotics too, but for instance, the cancer patient with growth hormones, that's a disaster waiting to happen. So if you want to eat meat, there's nothing wrong with meat in reasonable proportions. But if you want to eat meat, go find the way that it, you know, go find somebody that raises grass-fed beef or lamb or even, you know, organically produced chickens, okay? Organic grain that are pastured, that have access to, that get exercise, that walk around in the sun. These are all factors, and you know, as much as I talk about diet and health, some people think, oh, Dr. Cobb must be a vegetarian. I'm not. But when I buy meat, I buy it from the rancher. And I only buy from ranchers that have a strong, that I trust, that do grass-fed, you know, grass-feed their animals, and whom I trust that they're, you know, it's been a long-term commitment for them, so I actually trust them. And they don't, some, you know, produce half the herd as grass-fed and half as grain-fed. They just do it one way.
Right. Do you trust the labels that are all natural, without antibiotics, things like that? I usually buy my chicken from Sprouts.
Yeah. And Sprouts does have some, I buy some chicken from Sprouts, but the chicken I buy is the organic chicken. Now,
okay.
their stuff, all natural, has no definition. They can argue, in the absence of legal definition, that the plutonium waste from the Los Alamos National Laboratory is all natural. Okay? And they would be correct because there is no definition. So all natural is just a misleading thing. Now, if they say no antibiotics, no growth hormones, that's something that's, you know, worth looking into, right? And then you say, okay, can I trust that company? Have they been doing it that way for a long time? Do they only produce the no hormone, no antibiotic? Then that's a real plus. But I, you know, if you can afford it, I go one step further and I say, I also want the organic feed, which would give them the organic designation.
Okay.
And also, you know, you might look into the Weston Price Foundation, because the Weston Price Foundation looks at at raising animals as, you know, they look at traditional methods and they say, you know, so they really harp on the grass-fed idea, especially for the beef and the lamb. And if you can actually attend their meetings, either in Albuquerque, and I think they're starting up in Santa Fe again, and that way you get a lot of people that have that can give you references or sources for very good, clean meats. And that's the, you know, you might look under WAPF, Weston A. Price Foundation, or just look for Weston Price. If you look it up under the internet, you will certainly find people within, at least, you know, I'm sure they're still active in Albuquerque. And so you'll be able to get really good sources.
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you so much.
All right, great. And now we're going to go to another break, and we'll come back for the concluding segment. This is Daniel Cobb, Dr. of Oriental Medicine, and welcome back to my radio show. And today we're discussing optimizing the immune system with respect to what the conventional medical world describes as untreatable bacterial diseases because they're entirely drug resistant. Amy called in just on the last segment, and I forgot to mention that I've got her address and I'll be sending her a $15 gift certificate for Joe's Dining. Now, I did mention in the last segment, just before the call-in, that some people think that these drug-resistant bacteria are incredibly virulent. And I will argue against that. They appear to be incredibly virulent, but they appear to be incredibly virulent with respect to a patient that has their immune system highly suppressed by the use of large doses of multiple antibiotics. And so I would think that in the absence of that suppression of the natural immune system, that the virulence would not necessarily appear to be any greater than historical versions of tuberculosis. Now, this is a portion of the show where I tell you, you know, all right, what do I do to optimize my immune system? Of course, food plays a major part in it. But in order to discuss all the food issues, I'd have to be here all weekend. So I'm going to limit myself to comments about nutritional supplements. the first thing, and these are in the order of importance, roughly. First thing is vitamin D3. Remember those people in Prescott, Arizona, where they were getting a lot of sunlight and as part of reversing their tuberculosis condition? Well, you can make vitamin D3 too, also by getting out in the sun during the summer months and part of the spring and fall, probably not during the winter. even if you get a lot of sunlight in December on a sunny day, you're still not going to make vitamin D3. So at least for half the year, you need to supplement, and I, for instance, supplement all year round. The dosage of vitamin D is hard to arrive at, the proper dosage, but vitamin D3 does so many things. You know, it's not just bones and teeth, it's not just immune system, it's so many other things that it's definitely worthwhile making sure that you get enough vitamin D. There are blood tests to give you a clue as to what your vitamin D status is. But I definitely recommend, you know, thinking about supplementing vitamin D3. Iodine. Iodine is the next nutrient. And I like the idea of using Lugol solution. Our body needs two types of iodine, elemental iodine and potassium iodide. And Lugol solution has both. You can go online and find many varieties of Lugol solution. I might mine from a place in New Hampshire called a website called J. Crow. I actually have told people at when I've taught anatomy and physiology, that I really want to be Johnny Iodine Seed, much like Johnny Appleseed. I want to I buy Lugol's solution in bulk, actually in large quantity of bottles and 2 ounce bottles, and I sell it without marking it up because I think I have an obligation to put a bottle of Lugol's solution in everyone's hand. Selenium is a marvelous nutrient. It's an antioxidant. It's part of glutathione. It detoxifies mercury on its own. It's a major player in terms of suppressing infections of all kind, but especially viral infections. Getting the dosage right is important because the difference between the optimal dose and an overdose is sometimes within the factor of 2. Vitamin C. Everybody knows about vitamin C, and many people remember that Linus Pauling was promoting that everybody should take 10 grams of vitamin C a day. I don't take 10 grams, but I certainly take about 5. And vitamin C is an essential part of your immune system, and very few people get the optimal dose of vitamin C unless they supplement. Zinc and copper are really important. Zinc, some people, you know, some researchers have said are the originating point of almost all immune responses. And there's a relation, and copper is also very important in the immune system, and the relationship between the two is really important because the one, if you get a high dose of zinc, it'll suppress your copper. A high dose of copper will suppress your zinc. And getting them in the right balance will help keep your immune system operating without any of that suppression. Vitamin E is a really important part of your immune system also. And remember that vitamin E is just not one molecule. It's 8 different molecules. So when you're buying vitamin E, look on the back and count the number of chemical names. If you count 8, you've probably got a good version of vitamin E. And also, as far as your immune system, take care of your emotions. Learn about healthy food and eat that way, too. There are also many other herbs and antioxidants that are too numerous to mention here. So I do, and really, if you get your immune system operating well, it brings up one other topic, vaccinations. Vaccinations, theoretically, are there to prevent infectious diseases, usually viral diseases. But they also have a lot of adverse effects, and there's a large debate about whether or not vaccines are any good at all. And I, of course, my position on that debate, if you've heard my previous shows, are that I will not take any vaccine under any condition. I will never recommend it for any patient. But if you optimize your immune system using food and nutritional supplements, then there's not even any rationale that says that you should ever take a vaccine, that you or your children should ever take any vaccine. So I promote this as an alternative to vaccination. And at this point, I want to wrap up the show. I want to thank the two callers, Roger and Amy. And I want to thank all the people that have been listening in today. And I'll be back next week with another version of Natural Medicine.